Hi, this is Mike with the Talking Information Center, and we'll be reading the Beacon Hill Times today. The Beacon Hill Times dated Friday, December 19th, 2025. And for our first story, which is special to the Times, Advent School holds Coat Drive. Each December, the Advent School's students and families join together for its annual Coat Drive, supporting an elementary school in Boston. This year, the school's reach expanded to also include a new program, Kickoff for Kids, to provide winter jackets for children in need. Advent School was a challenging 100 coats, but thanks to the hardworking students and their families, on December 3rd, the school contributed more than 130 new winter coats for local kids. Students in grades 4 through 6 took the lead, transforming this effort into a true student-led initiative in service and community care. After reading The Mitten Tree and reflecting on the importance of giving, students brainstormed how they could inspire others to get involved. Working in their advisory groups, they took on a range of leadership levels. For grade 4, they designed and hung signs around the school to promote the coat drive. Grades 5 through 6, they created digital flyers and Canva to share with families. And all students wrote 3 emails to family, friends, and neighbors encouraging donations. Presented the coat drive to the community share on November 13th, helped promote the drive during morning drop-off, and sorted and prepared collected jackets for delivery. Through this project, the students discovered the power of collective action and community leadership. By organizing, communicating, and following through, they not only are keeping others warm this winter, they're also learning what it means to lead with empathy and purpose. And for our next story, safety concerns rise around e-bikes, scooters on Beacon Hill. This story written by Millennia Fernsler. Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but thankfully you don't have to face the frigid Boston wind to pick up your lo mein next door. An irresistibly convenient alternative is at the fingertips of most Americans. With the aid of a delivery app, a courier can deliver a steaming dinner to your doorstep within an hour. But what are the consequences of all the mopeds, motorized scooters, and e-bikes necessary to keep these carry-out orders coming? New regulations for delivery companies in Boston will go into effect in January. The city's most recent attempt to address safety concerns involving micro-mobility vehicles. What began as a lifeline for restaurants during the COVID-19 pandemic continues to gain rapid popularity, according to the City of Boston press release. Colin Zick, president of the Beacon Hill Civic Association, said the volume of food deliveries has skyrocketed since 2022. And according to the Boston Transportation Department, so did 311 reports related to delivery vehicles. The ordinance requires companies like Uber Eats, DoorDash, and Grubhub to insure their drivers, mandates licensing for all delivery vehicles, and makes Boston the first city in the U.S. to pass regulations that require data sharing from delivery apps. Sharon Durkin, city councilor of Beacon Hills District 8, and a driving force behind the new regulation, says, quote, "This ordinance going into effect is long awaited. This is one of the top issues I hear about from across the district, not just in Beacon Hill." However, delivery companies pushed back against mandates during a public hearing last February. Uber's public policy manager, Katie Franger, said that their current insurance only covers motorized vehicles and that they are unable to find a way to insure all couriers. Those who rely on bicycles may lose their jobs. She said umbrella insurance would also raise costs for residents and contradict the city's efforts to lower carbon emission by prioritizing gas-powered vehicles. Durkin said, quote, "We are trying to strike a balance between understanding that this is a folks' livelihood, but also understanding that safety in the city of Boston and license and insurance is incredibly important. A pedestrian died weeks after being hit by a food delivery driver riding an e-bike in Back Bay in September, which inspired further discussion among city council members." Durkin said, quote, "Unfortunately, these individual incidents are a symptom of a bigger problem." While crash report data does not specify vehicle type, counselors say it's clear that smaller motorized vehicles pose unique safety hazards due to their ability to weave through traffic. Counselor at large, Ed Flynn, took a more restrictive approach in September, with a proposed ban on scooters, mopeds, and e-bikes being used by third-party food delivery drivers. The ordinance faced pushback from counselors who cited concerns about penalizing delivery drivers instead of the companies. This concern has not prevented an increase in police enforcement. In an effort BPD refers to as Operation Safe Scooter, officers have been cracking down on moped and scooter violations in recent months. In October, Beacon Hill's district officers seized three mopeds, issued citations, and chased down an arrested motorcyclist for disregarding traffic laws. Zick said he would like to see even more targeted enforcement in Beacon Hill. He said, quote, "Usually the drivers are masked, so you can't identify anyone who is doing these things that are threats to public safety." An informal survey sent to Beacon Hill residents by the Beacon Hill Civic Association last month found that 88% of 123 respondents reported seeing scooter driving the wrong way on a sidewalk in the past 30 days. 37% said they witnessed violations daily. Andrew Blau, a Beacon Hill resident who was walking his dog, Billy, said he couldn't count the number of times he and his pet have nearly been, quote, clocked by moped drivers going the wrong way down one-way streets. People think it's almost like a bike, where they can kind of just go wherever they want to go. Scooter driver Joshua Acosta has been working for Uber Eats for about 2 years. He said it takes a lot of experience to navigate Boston streets without breaking laws. Quote, "Those who go the wrong way make us all look bad as well, since we are both driving the same vehicle type," he explained in an interview translated from Spanish. He said Uber Eats provides no training or safety enforcement for their workers. Acosta sees a bigger problem with e-bikes, which do not require registration or a driver's license in Massachusetts as long as they don't exceed 20 miles per hour. However, the speed of an e-bike can be difficult to distinguish from the outside, sometimes blurring the line between a bicycle and a moped. Cyclists go on the sidewalk, Acosta said. Some drive in electric bikes, and they can run 40 to 50 miles per hour like a scooter. Durkin said another gap in the new regulations is that not every moped and motorbike driver is a third-party delivery driver. It's not going to solve every single issue, she said. Even so, she said she hopes the ordinance is a positive step towards solving the problem. She says, quote, "I encourage all Beacon Hill residents to reach out to me to see the effect potentially of this ordinance and any differences they see moving forward." Melania Fernsler, the writer of this story, is a student in the Boston University Journalism Program, and this story was in partnership between the Beacon Hill Times and the Boston University Journalism Program. Next up here is the Beacon Hill Civic Association Community Corner. And first is the importance of 311. Boston 311 is a free service that connects you with the city of Boston for non-emergency help and information. Whether you're reporting a broken streetlight, looking up your trash day, or trying to reach the right department, 311 makes it easier. You can contact the city by calling 311 or 617-635-4500 using the BOS 311 app to upload photos or by submitting requests online at 311@boston.gov. Anytime, any day. Report missing bricks, trash put out incorrectly, and contractor parking abuse on the 311 app. Your report assigns a number to the case, and the more reports that come in for that case, the quicker the response will be. It's up to us to do our part, so use the 311 system whenever you have something to report to the city. As for the upcoming meetings, the BHCA Zoning and Licensing will meet on Wednesday, January 7th at 6 p.m. via Zoom, and the Board of Directors will meet Monday, January 12th at 7 p.m. Also, save the date. Bricks and Bubbles, a celebration of preservation, will happen on Thursday, March 5th, 2026 at the Liberty Hotel. Corporate sponsorship opportunities are available at bhcivic.org. For further information on BHCA events and meetings or to volunteer, you can contact the BHCA office at 617-227-1922. For the Neighborhood Roundup now, come play Mahong at the West End Community Center. Whether you are a beginner or an experienced player, you are invited to join the friendly Mahong group. Instructors will be available to help new players, and everyone is welcome. Come meet new people, socialize, and play the game. The group meets on the first and third Wednesdays of each month from 1:30 to 3:30 in the afternoon at the West End Community, within the West End Neighborhood Center at 75 Blossom Court. The entrance is on Thorough Path. To sign up or for more information, you can email Sandy Connor at ssconnor46@gmail.com. For our next story, annual holiday event connects hundreds of Boston's older adults with safety training. The story is special to the Times. On December 12th, hundreds of older adults visited Boston City Hall for the annual Holiday Connections event, hosted by Boston's Age Strong Commission and AT&T. This long-standing collaboration has been held for more than 30 years and provides Boston's older adults with one-on-one technology help, scam and fraud prevention workshops, safety presentations, free domestic and international calling, and a day of fun holiday activities. Emily Shea, Boston's Age Strong commissioner, said, quote, Age Strong is so grateful to partner with AT&T on our Holiday Connections event. Hundreds of Boston's older residents will have the opportunity to connect with loved ones across the world, learn new tips for their technology, and enjoy the day together. The festive event provided breakfast, lunch, holiday-themed activities, a hot cocoa bar, music, information booths, and artisan crafts made by members of Boston's older adult community. In addition to providing a phone bank allowing free domestic and international calls, AT&T and the Boston Police Department presented a digital safety workshop about scam and fraud prevention, cyber safety, and general technology training. AT&T technicians also worked one-on-one with guests to help with their phones, tablets, and other connected technology in troubleshooting. Commissioner Michael Cox of the Boston Police Department said in a statement, quote, We are grateful for partnerships like this one that create an opportunity for our officers to connect with Boston's older adults about ways to protect themselves from scammers and other dangers. Community policing is about building trust and connecting with people, and we're happy to be part of this great event. Since the start of 2024, AT&T and the Boston Police Department have collaborated on a citywide effort to educate older adults about digital safety and scam and fraud prevention, hosting 25 workshops in nearly every city neighborhood. The Boston Fire Department and the Boston Police Department Crime Stoppers also gave safety presentations to attendees. John Emra, president of AT&T Northeast Region, said in a statement, quote, Technology allows older adults freedom, convenience, and communication. And it's important that they have the resources to enjoy the digital world safely and securely. We are grateful to Mayor Wu, Commissioner Shea, and Age Strong, as well as the Boston Police and the Boston Fire for their collaboration and commitment to keeping Boston's older adults safe and connected. We hope that this event provides the warmth of connection with loved ones, the confidence to harness the power of technology, and a lot of holiday joy. The next story here, also special to the Times, the Haley Driscoll administration awards over $750,000 in grants to support greater food access. The Haley Driscoll administration announced $779,458 in funding to improve food access in underserved communities throughout Massachusetts by increasing local food production. The funding will directly support the growth of urban farms, community gardens, in food business operations, targeting areas that struggle with food insecurity. Among the recipients are $20,979 to the trustees of reservations for improving pathways for seniors and mobility-challenged garden implements, and $85,000 to Commonwealth Kitchen for their large-scale specialized food processing equipment. The Massachusetts Department of Agricultural Resources is awarding grants through the state's Urban Agriculture Program and the Massachusetts Food Ventures Program to 17 organizations. The funds will help strengthen the local food system, increase local food production, and expand retail and distribution channels to distribute more healthy, fresh foods across the state. Governor Maura Haley saying in a statement, quote, With President Trump repeatedly attacking the programs that help Massachusetts families afford food, programs like these will increase the supply of locally grown, healthy, affordable food. These awards are supporting local jobs, farmers, and small food businesses that keep money circulating in our economy and provide essential food for the people of Massachusetts. Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll adding, quote, Investing in community gardens and urban farms gives neighborhoods more control over the food, their own food supply. These projects increase consistent access to fresh and local produce, create real opportunities for skill building, and help communities build reliable distribution systems. The Urban Agriculture Program will provide resources to urban farms and community gardens to increase their production capacity. This means more local food for low to moderate income residents who often face challenges accessing fresh, affordable, nutritious food. The Massachusetts Food Ventures Program helps increase food access by funding infrastructure to support processing, distribution channels, and retail outlets that are located primarily in or near communities of low or moderate income, including gateway cities and rural communities. Completed projects will enhance access to Massachusetts-grown, harvested, or caught food products through the development of collaborations with local enterprises and public and private entities. Energy and Environmental Affairs Secretary Rebecca Tepper said in a statement, quote, fresh, affordable food is a basic need for our communities across Massachusetts. Programs like urban agriculture and food ventures strengthen our food system by increasing production and distribution capacity as demand for local food continues to grow. And the MDAR Commissioner Ashley Randall says, quote, our food access programs have been transformative in helping to create a stronger local food system. The Food Ventures program provides opportunities for mid-range businesses, creating greater access to Massachusetts-grown food and increasing post-harvest opportunities for farmers. Through the urban agriculture program, more food will be grown in urban neighborhoods, helping to ensure that residents in these communities have greater access to local fresh produce, improving their health outcomes and enhancing their quality of life. And another quote here from Senator Adam Gomez from Hamden. I am glad to see the release of this grant funding, particularly to two organizations in Springfield, Wellspring Harvest and Nodica St. Community Farm, who do such great work uniting our communities and providing healthy food and nutrition education to their members. We must continue to invest in community-centered food resources throughout the Commonwealth, shortening the distance that our food travels and mitigating gaps in supply chains that only drive up prices. And I'm proud of this administration for prioritizing these efforts. And Representative Stephen Ouellette from Westport saying, quote, I'm thrilled to see much needed help during these troubling economic times. This funding will provide opportunities that are critical components to communities in my district and beyond. The next three also special to the Times. State Fire Marshal reminds residents, beware of Christmas tree fire hazards. As the holiday season gets underway, State Fire Marshal John Devine is reminding residents to select Christmas trees carefully, water them every day, and decorate them safely to reduce the risk of a fire. Quote, a dry Christmas tree can burn like a forest fire in your home, said State Fire Marshal Devine. Water it every day or firefighters might have to do it for you. The Department of Fire Services recommends the following Christmas tree safety tips to help you have a silent night. First, choosing a tree. Select a fresh tree with needles that bend and stay fixed to the branches. If a tree's needles crack when you bend them or they fall off when you run your hand along a branch, the tree is already drying out and you should choose a different tree. Have about 2 inches cut from the bottom of the trunk before you put it up. Sap can clog an older cut and prevent it from absorbing water in the stand. Also, you want to pick the right spot in your home. Place your tree in a sturdy stand away from doors and windows. These are your escape routes in the event of an emergency and firefighters may need to use it to enter. Keep the tree at least 3 feet from any heat source. That includes fireplaces, wood stoves, heating vents, radiators, and space heaters. You also want to water the tree every day. A fresh tree can drink a lot of water, and it may need to be watered more than once a day at first, so keep the water level high. If the bottom of the trunk is exposed to air, sap could seal it off and cause it to dry out prematurely. Even the freshest tree will start to dry out after a few days. Dispose of it promptly after the holiday. And decorate safely. Choose lights that are listed by an independent testing laboratory like UL or Intertech ETL and follow the manufacturer's instructions and safety information. Before plugging in a string of lights or hanging it on a tree, check the wiring for cracks, pinches, and wear. Discard any damaged strings. And when decorating outdoors, be sure the lights and the extension cords are rated for outdoor use and plug them into an outlet with a ground fault circuit interrupter. Almost half of home decoration fires start with candles and other heat sources too close to decorations, so keep lit candles on a sturdy saucer or candle holder and at least 3 feet from a tree. Even better, switch to battery-powered flameless candles, which flicker just like the real thing. For a video clip showing a Christmas tree fire under controlled conditions, visit the Department of Fire Services YouTube channel. For our next story, also special to the Times, Save the Harbor is giving out $300,000 for free beach events. Through the Better Beaches program, Save the Harbor, Save the Bay, and the Department of Conservation and Recreation, DCR, are looking for input from community organizations, local groups, and artists to bring diverse and interesting events to DCR beaches in Nahant, Lynn, Revere, Winthrop, East Boston, South Boston, Dorchester, Quincy, and Hull. These events will be free to community members to attend and should reflect the many interests and identities of the community. Anyone can apply to this grant program, whether they're part of an organization, collective, or a creative individual with a vision for a more diverse and activated waterfront. This grant program is not just about securing funds. It is a way to get involved, bring community to the Boston Harbor beaches, and help shape the future of the waterfront. Grants from $2,500 to $8,500 will be awarded based on a tiered system depending on the number of people the proposed event will serve and the amount of different components involved. The Better Beaches program has funded different types of events, including wellness and recreational programs, children's programming, performances, to music and to cultural events, as long as they involve the community and are at one of the region's many beaches. Some examples of previous events Save the Harbor has funded are a community care and wellness fair with Mutual Aid Eastie, where 200 people, mostly Spanish-speaking East Boston community members, participated in various health and wellness activities, like massages and arts and crafts on Constitution Beach in East Boston. Also, Ability Dance Boston's dance performance featured performances from dancers and musicians with disabilities who created beach-inspired choreography and an original score that wowed over 100 attendees on Constitution Beach in East Boston. Namaste Sober Beach Yoga, where over 400 attendees participated in free weekly beach yoga on Revere Beach, especially created with those who are sober and are in a recovery mind. To apply for a grant or ask any questions about the Better Beaches program, you can contact Maya Smith at smith@savetheharbor.org or Isabella Carrion at Carrion, C-A-R-R-I-O-N, at savetheharbor.org. Applications are due by January 31st, 2026 at 11:59 p.m., after which Save the Harbor's Better Beaches Grants Committee will review the proposals and reach out to the selected grantees by March 11th, 2026. For more information and for a full list of the 2025 grantees, go to savetheharbor.org or attend one of the information sessions. Save the Harbor looks forward to receiving your ideas on how to make the public beaches accessible and enjoyable spaces for all communities. And if you didn't know here, Save the Harbor, Save the Bay is the region's leading voice for clean water and continued public investment in Boston Harbor, the region's public beaches, and the Boston Harbor Islands. Since 1986, the mission has been to restore and protect Boston Harbor, Massachusetts Bay, and the marine environment, and to share them with the public for everyone to enjoy. Save the Harbor is committed to making Boston Harbor, the islands, the beaches, and the programs inclusive, equitable, diverse, and accessible to everyone and anyone. They provide free programs, events, and create opportunities for people to experience Boston Harbor and the spectacular urban natural resources firsthand, with an emphasis on breaking down barriers between race, language, income, and ability. And now to a Beacon Hill Times editorial titled, "There's Still Time to Help Those in Need." It's hard to believe that Christmas is just a week away. We realize that the compressed holiday shopping season has put even more pressure than usual on all of us. But we hope that our readers can find some time to remember those in need this holiday season. The stock market may be booming, and unemployment is still near an all-time low, but there was the depressing news this past week that homelessness among Americans once again has increased in the past year, and millions of American children, 1 in 8, faced food insecurity on a regular basis. The cold, harsh reality for many Americans in 2025 is that the promise of benefiting from a booming economy is still only a dream, where even those who are lucky enough to work full-time are barely getting by, thanks to the crushingly high cost of living, especially housing. And for those who cannot find a job or who are unable to work, and especially for their children, the holiday joy that most of us take for granted is just an illusion. We recognize that in our hurry-hurry world, where we barely have time to think, the Christmas season brings with an onslaught of last-minute shopping and holiday preparations. But we urge all of our readers who have the means to do so to take a brief time out in order to consider doing something to make the holiday season a bit brighter for those who are less fortunate. We can ensure our readers that any gift or charity that we make, whether it be to Toys for Tots or to the Salvation Army Santa, or a food bank donation, that it'll be the most meaningful and most satisfying act that we can make this holiday season. Short play penned by Phillips Saint resident Rob Whitney to premiere next month in Newburyport. The story written by Dan Murphy. A short play written by Phillip Street resident Rob Whitney will be among eight works featured in the two-day New Works Festival 2026, which kicks off Saturday, January 24th at the Firehouse Center for the Arts in Newburyport. Over the past few years, Whitney and his wife Marcy Axelrad have regularly attended small theater performances at the nonprofit Firehouse Center, along with the Lyric Stage Boston in the Back Bay and Calderwood Hill in Boston's Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, among other venues. After the couple attended a performance at the Firehouse Center, Whitney went to the organization's website and learned of its upcoming New Works Festival. He decided then to try his hand as a first-time playwright. Via the application procedure, Whitney went online and picked hockey from a number of provided selections as the category for his piece. He began the writing process by dictating it in a stream of consciousness manner, before printing the first draft and refining it over time. Whitney submitted the script for his short play, called Puck, for consideration in the festival around May, but didn't learn that it had been selected until around the end of November. The submissions had been read and were then selected by a group of three judges, none of whom was aware of the identities of the respective authors, according to Whitney. "I was shocked and kind of excited," he said, learning that his short play had been chosen for inclusion in the upcoming festival. Puck focuses on a conversation between a father and his hockey-playing son in the basement of a Beacon Hill townhouse. It's a comedy drama. Something happens, and the father and son have a conversation about the son's ability to continue playing hockey, said Whitney. While Whitney himself never played hockey, he played soccer in his youth instead, his son Adam, now an 18-year-old freshman at the University of Tennessee, began playing the game at around age 6 in the North End Youth Hockey at Storidi Skating Rink. Adam continued playing the game through high school, and Whitney admits that much of the dialogue in Puck mirrors conversations he had with his son over the years. "Some of the dialogue is funny stuff. It's what my son and I talked about," he said. For the upcoming performances, Puck will be directed by Arlene Bernard, with two unidentified actors as the father and son. Keeping in line with the other short-length plays featured in the festival, it's one act and runs about 9.5 minutes long. The same eight plays in the festival, including Puck, will be staged again at the theater during a matinee festival performance on January 25th. Meanwhile, Whitney, an attorney by profession, is already now at work in his spare time on his next short play, which will focus on a conversation between two people at a downtown Boston coffee shop. And looking ahead, he says he hopes to write a longer play focusing on a courtroom trial. Firehouse Center for the Arts New Works Festival 2026 takes place Friday, January 24th from 7 to 9 p.m. and again on Saturday, January 25th from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Firehouse Center for the Arts, located at 1 Market Square in Newburyport. Tickets are $15 for general admission and can be purchased online via the Firehouse website at firehouse.org. You've been listening to the Talking Information Center. I am Mike, who is reading the Beacon Hill Times, dated Friday, December 19th, 2025. Thank you for listening.